Today on Rockin' the Suburbs!
Peoples, this is your old friend Jim Lenihan, and I am here with you today on Rockin' the Suburbs to talk about music, of course, but also sport. Patrick Foster is off today. I am going solo, and I want to talk a bit about a huge, huge, monumental, mammoth event that is happening tonight. If you are listening to this episode on the day that it is posted, Friday, December 20th, in the year 2024, tonight, have your television set on at 8 p.m. Eastern Time to see this monumental event. The first game ever in the newly expanded college football playoff. 12 teams now in the playoff. Fans have been begging for this for years, and it is finally here. And the first game in this monumental event will feature historically the worst team in college football history. Who am I talking about? My Indiana Hoosiers. Now, I went to college in the late 80s, Indiana University, Bloomington, Indiana. Most people know it as a basketball school. At that time, we had legendary and controversial basketball coach Bob Knight. When I arrived at Indiana in 1985, Bob Knight had already won 2 national championships for the Hoosiers, 1976 and 1981. And that was on top of 2 previous national titles that Indiana had won in its history in men's basketball. Those came in 1940 and 1953. So while I was at school, 1987, Indiana won another men's basketball national championship. So I was there, got to experience that. It was insane, let me tell you. What a fantastic on-campus experience. You know, I wasn't at the site of the national championship. That was in New Orleans. I was at school. We watched it on TV. The whole campus exploded when we won that national championship in 1987. So 5 banners hang in Assembly Hall marking those achievements. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a 6th banner added. That's not the point of this episode. What I want to say here is, to most people who have any impression of IU, probably one of the first things they think of is basketball school, Bob Knight. Maybe a little bit, there was a movie in the 70s called Breaking Away, which featured bicycle racing, which is another thing that is done there, but that's a little bit more obscure these days. But anyway, what you don't think of is American football. You do not think of the Hoosiers as any kind of football power, and the football being America's game, really. That's a little bit unfortunate. So let me just tell you real quickly here how big of a deal this is. So I'm going to the source of all human knowledge, and I'm looking at the worst NCAA football teams of all time. And let me just say here that Indiana started playing football in 1887, 137 years ago, 1887. That is a long time. In that amount of time, previous to this season, the most games Indiana had ever won in a season was 9. Okay? Now you say, oh, 9 games, that's pretty good. Okay. Yeah, again, they've been playing for 137 years. They had won 9 games twice. The last time was in 1967. That was the year I was born, peoples, okay? Before that, you have to go back to 1945. So only twice had they won 9 games in a season. Twice in 137 years. They had never, obviously, then won 10 games in a season, nor had they ever won 11 games in a season. Those both happened this year. The Hoosiers are 11-1, okay? I just want to point out, if you go back and you look at their records, you'll see a lot of 2-win seasons, 3-win seasons, 4-win seasons, a lot of losing seasons. In fact, if you look at the all-time records of every NCAA Division I football program, and you add up all the wins and losses, the team with the most losses ever in history, 713 losses, is Indiana. Okay? They are historically the worst team in all of NCAA football, okay? I just want to make this clear because for whatever reason, it's a little bit different than basketball. College football does not seem to appreciate a good Cinderella story. There's sort of a bit of a elite club attitude toward it that you have to be part of this, one of these sort of blue blood programs to warrant any kind of respect. If somebody sort of, you know, crashes the gate, as Indiana has done this year, people are very skeptical, and that's fine. Okay. But I just want to say this should be kind of a feel good story, right? The worst team ever is in the college football playoff. All right. I just want to make this clear to people. This is the most underdoggiest of underdogs. Okay. And who does Indiana face tonight? Notre Dame. One of the greats in college football history, right? We're talking Newt Rockne. We're talking Rudy. We're talking, you know, however many national championships Notre Dame has. In fact, I can find that out right here. Notre Dame has 11 national championships in their history. Indiana has 0. It would probably be negative numbers if it could be, okay? So, just want to set this up tonight. If there's any good in your heart, you're going to root for Indiana tonight. I think we've made that clear. All right, now, how does this relate to music? Well, I'm going to go back to when I was in school and talk about some of the music that I remember from Indiana bands when I was in college, okay? Now, I got to say this. As much as I've been talking up about how bad Indiana football has been in over 137 years, when I was in school in the late 80s, I did get to see some of the better seasons. We had a coach then named Bill Mallory, and he did pretty well with that team, and we had some winning seasons, and it was this weird little blip in time that I got to experience because we beat Ohio State twice in that time period, or there was a couple of wins and a tie. Back then you could have ties, I remember. So beating Ohio State, a big deal. I was there when we beat Michigan once. It was like a cold, rainy day, and it was a low-scoring game, and Indiana upset Michigan. And then Michigan football coach Bo Schembechler called it the darkest day in Michigan football history. That's how he felt about losing to Indiana, okay? So we did have a little bit of success back then. I was lucky enough to experience that. In fact, our listener Mark Neese, who went to Michigan State, will recall we have talked about this, that there was one season in there where Indiana actually had a chance to possibly win the conference, the Big Ten Conference, by virtue of beating Ohio State and Michigan, getting them out of the way, but then ended up losing to Michigan State in, I believe it was the last game of the season. Michigan State won the conference. It was Indiana's one chance to go to the Rose Bowl. They had been to the Rose Bowl one time before. That was that year, 1967, that I talked about. And looking back at that, they got to go not because they won the conference outright. They tied with other teams, but because they had not been there before. They got selected to go. So anyway, after this brief period of time, when I was in school, Indiana just went back to being terrible. Okay, so I got to experience a little bit of some highlights here in the program. And let me just talk a little bit about what it was like to go to school back then. So, music-wise, I get to Indiana, fall of 1985. And also, in that same month when I started school there, there was a brand new release by a guy who had a bit of a national profile on the music scene. And he released a new album that was a big hit album. He's changed his name a bit over the years, but back then he went by John Cougar Mellencamp. And Mellencamp, if you don't know, you know, he was born in a small town, right? That small town was Seymour, Indiana, which was not far from Bloomington down there in southern Indiana. By this time, he lived just outside of Bloomington and had a home studio, which, you know, was not necessarily a common thing even back then by the mid-80s. He had a home studio. That's where he recorded his records, including this one, as I mentioned, was a big hit. It was called Scarecrow. It was the one that had that small town song, which was a big hit that we all know. But there was another single from that album, a top 10 single that I think over the years has become maybe a bit underappreciated. I think it's a hell of a song. There you go. Some Lonely All Night, John Mellencamp. I really dig that song. And you couldn't walk around campus then without hearing this record coming out of, you know, dorm room windows or, you know, frat houses and that sort of stuff. It was just everywhere. It was everywhere. And a couple things here related to football a bit. Well, not a bit, quite a bit, a lot. John Mellencamp has been a big supporter of Indiana athletics over the years. He still lives in Bloomington, and he goes to a lot of the games, and he's contributed a lot of money. And this year, I think, let's see here. Yeah, just this year, they built a statue of him. There's now a statue outside of IU Auditorium in honor of his support of the university. All right. Mellencamp, he was certainly not a recluse. You would see him from time to time. Now, he didn't go out and sort of flaunt his stardom, but, you know, sometimes he'd just sort of live a normal life and be out and about. And people, as I remember, were generally respectful of that and would pretty much leave him alone. And I saw him a couple of times at this, like, family restaurant called Mustard's. Just, you know, like almost like an Applebee's sort of a place. And, you know, he just went in and with his family had some food, and everybody just sort of, you know, would look at him, but leave him alone. And I think being in a small town, he got to live a relatively normal life. People respected that. So one last thing I'll say here, when I talk about ties to football, I did meet while I was in school a woman named Crystal Taliaferro, and she was a singer, and including she was a backup singer in Mellencamp's band at that time. She was a friend of a friend, and I got to meet her and hang out a little bit once. And she later was also a singer in Bruce Springsteen's other band. Remember when he broke up the E Street Band and recorded with some other folks and went on tour with different musicians? Well, Crystal Taliaferro was a singer in that effort as well. And she was related to George Taliaferro, an uncle, I believe. And he was actually one of the rare greats in Indiana football history. In fact, kind of an important player, because he played at Indiana in the 40s, and he became the first black player drafted by an NFL team in 1949, drafted by the Baltimore Colts. So there you go. One more thing I want to say about Mellencamp and football. In the spring of 86, that was my freshman year, Mellencamp did a big concert at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. And I think at this time, a stadium show would have been a rarity for Mellencamp. He was probably at the arena level, I'm guessing, at that point. But in Bloomington, he could fill a football stadium, and there was a concert there. I was looking at the set list online. It was April 26, 1986, Memorial Stadium, Bloomington, Indiana. He played 19 songs in his main set and then did an encore with 7 songs, and then a second encore with another song. Ended with Under the Boardwalk, the Drifters song. Actually, there were quite a lot of covers. The whole encore, that previous encore I mentioned, was all covers as well, including Cold Sweat, Land of a Thousand Dances, Proud Mary. I mean, it was a rockin' show. So the thing I remember on that is, at that point in time, Memorial Stadium did not have lights. This is how old I am. There were no lights at that stadium. They were all day games. And they had to truck in like temporary lighting rigs, these huge towers that they set up in order to have the concert there. So, okay, now I'm going to talk here about another well-known Indiana band at the time. Let's call them a temporary Indiana band, because most of you know them as being from Georgia, and that would be REM. Because when I was a freshman in Bloomington, REM recorded at John Mellencamp's studio. And I think it was in the springtime, spring of 86, they recorded their album Life's Rich Pageant. And there was a bit of a buzz around that. You know, this was all pre-internet, pre-social media, all that kind of stuff. So you just sort of heard about this. And they'd be cited from time to time in Bloomington. I never saw the members of REM out and about, but other people might, you know, see them at a cafe or that kind of thing. And they were recording at that Mellencamp studio, and they recorded Life's Rich Pageant right there. So that was kind of a big deal. And then, of course, a very big deal when that album came out in 86. And, you know, we sort of claimed it as our own. Okay. Now, sticking here with major label stuff, I'm going to get to indie stuff, cool indie stuff here in a moment, but I want to mention this really quickly. There was another guy while I was in school there, another Indiana musician who got a major label deal, and there was a lot of buzz. He was not from Bloomington, but he was, I believe, from the Terre Haute area. Yeah, not too far from Terre Haute, in a little town called Brazil, Indiana. That's where he was from. But he was making sort of a name for himself all around the state at this time, including in Bloomington. He would play some shows. And let's see, in 1987, this guy was signed to Epic Records. So kind of a big deal. Another major label artist from small town Indiana. And this guy's name was Henry Lee Sumner. Now, his major label success was not as big as John Mellencamp's, but in that time, I guess it was 1987, after he was signed, but maybe around the time his debut album came out, or maybe just before, I can't remember exactly, I was working for the college newspaper, the Indiana Daily Student, and I proposed and did a profile of Mr. Henry Lee Sumner for the school paper, and I went and interviewed him when he came to town for a show. And somehow in the conversation, we got to talking about, you know, his upbringing and his family and his mom and that sort of thing. And so I decided to interview his mom for this profile. And he you know, gave her a call and we set it up. And I drove out to Brazil, Indiana, and talked with her for a while and incorporated that into the profile. And lo and behold, this profile that I wrote won a national award. There was like College Journalism Awards, and I think one of the category was like personality profile, that kind of thing. And it didn't win first place, but I think I won like second or third place, something like that. And it was just one of those things I learned in journalism, whereas if you're writing about somebody, sure, you want to interview them, you want to talk to them, but you want to interview other people talking about them, because that's where you get the good stuff, okay? And anyway, Henry Lee Sumner went on to release some music on the Epic label. Let's see here. He had one song that went to number 18 called Hey Baby, okay? That was from an album called I've Got Everything. But the song that I most remember was this one here from his 1988 debut, self-titled debut, Henry Lee Sumner on Epic Records, and it's called I Wish I Had a Girl. There you go. Henry Lee Sumner, I Wish I Had a Girl, has that sort of 80s heartland kind of sound, right? So you get it. Okay, let's move on to some indie stuff. So when I was in school in Bloomington, you know, I would go, especially later on in my college career, be able to go to bars and stuff and see cool local bands. And again, I was working for the school paper, so sometimes I would interview these bands and do stories on them and that sort of thing. And I just want to play for you some stuff that you probably, almost certainly, are not familiar with, because these were not bands who ever went on to make hit records. But they put out some really cool music at the time, really cool original music. And you know, you remember the days when like you could go to a record store and there'd be like a local section. This time it was cassettes. It was not so much like CDs even yet. But there'd be like a local section where bands would have cassettes that they provided to the store to sell, right? And you know, that was great. You know, you go in and maybe you saw the band play somewhere, and you go in and you buy their cassette, and it was awesome. So I'm going to start here with this band, not Bloomington, but Indianapolis. called the Datura Seeds. And I think I played them once before on this podcast, but it's been a long time. But it was one of those cassettes that I got and just loved it. Let's see. The album was called Who Do You Want It To Be? And this just became one of my favorite cassettes. I would listen to it all the time. So let's just hear how it kicks off. This is a song called S&P 69. There you go, the Datura Seeds. I think I misspoke. This was not self-released. This was on an indie label called Toxic Shock Records, and which is, you know, a small label, but nevertheless. One of the guys in the Datura Seeds was Paul Mahern, I think the main guy in the Datura Seeds. He's also known for a band called the Zero Boys. Some of you might be familiar with the Zero Boys. Anyway, Datura Seeds, Who Do You Want It To Be? You can find that on the streamings. So go listen to that record. It is solid all the way through. Really cool stuff. You know, pretty power pop kind of thing with perhaps some touches of punk. But there you go. Datura Seeds. Check that out. Now, another band I want to talk about is at that era in Bloomington, Indiana, was called the Rosebloods. And here's the deal with the Rosebloods. Really cool band. I have at least one of their cassettes, Dragon in the Field. I might have the other one too. They had another one called Under the Apple Tree. These were more like self-release kind of stuff. This was just a really cool band. The main guy in the band was John Terrell, and he was known for a couple of other bands. There was one band called the Dancing Cigarettes, which predated my time in Bloomington, but people would talk about. And there was another one that I think came later called the Walking Ruins. And both of those were kind of experimental bands, almost like art rock kind of thing. But the Rosebloods were more sort of 60s style garage rock and pretty straightforward and just a really cool sound. They would even do like a number of instrumentals. They had a saxophone in the band, just kind of cool garage rock guitar stuff, some clean lines, you know, kind of more traditional, you know, 3 minute, 2.5 minute pop songs, like that kind of stuff. Just really cool. So there's a number of really good songs they put out. And I would say the best way to listen to this band, because they're a little more obscure, but the best way to listen to this band is go to a site called musicalfamilytree.com, musicalfamilytree.com, where there's a whole bunch of like indie stuff on there that you can just stream for free. And that was a website that I think it came around in sometime in the 2000s and was specifically meant to showcase these Indiana indie artists, mostly Indiana. I think then it spread a bit to some other states. But you can find a lot of really cool music on there, including the Rosebloods. So go check that out. The song I'm going to play for you here is called Matter of Factly.
I'm so sad and lonely for your love.
All right, there you go. Matter of Factly by the Rosebloods. Go check that out at musicalfamilytree.com, and then you can just search for Rosebloods. All right. Now I'm going to finish up here with what I consider to be the best Bloomington indie band of the late 80s. This band did end up signing with an independent label called Community 3. They had at least one video played on MTV's 120 Minutes. They also apparently were featured somewhat on John Peel's radio show on the BBC. And this band was called Arson Garden. And Arson Garden, if you have a sense in your mind of what an 80s college rock band sounds like, well, that's Arson Garden. And I mean this in the best possible way. Really talented songwriters, really interesting, vibrant music. And if you saw them live, just a great front person in April Combs, really dynamic. Just a wonderful band, Arson Garden. I would suggest you check them out. You can find them on the major streaming services and find those three albums. The first album they put out on Community 3 was called Under Towers, and that came out in 1990. So that was right after I graduated, but I got to know them when they were putting out their indie cassettes and all that kind of stuff and playing around Bloomington a lot. Not only playing in clubs, but just playing in campus, community center rooms and things like that. You just go and you'd see Arson Garden play, and they were just great. And I got to know them a little bit, interviewed them for the paper, talked with them. Just really, really enjoyed their music. And so what I'm going to play for you here, as I mentioned, you can find the official releases on the streaming services. It is out there. Listen to Arson Garden, support Arson Garden. But I'm going to go back to this Musical Family Tree site where you can find some of the other cool stuff from the band, including there's some live recordings and stuff. Not necessarily great fidelity, but something that probably somebody just had a cassette recorder and recorded off of. Who knows? It could be off the board. I don't know. But one thing you can find here is it's called 1988 Cassette. So that would have been something they self-released that you could, buy down at Karma Records or what have you. And I had this cassette, listened to it a lot. A lot of the songs ended up on their debut album, Under Towers. But, this is a little bit rawer, a little bit more sort of true indie spirit. And so I'm going to play one of the songs here off of that cassette for you as the playout today. Okay, I've been going on and on about Indiana music. Let's get back to Indiana football tonight. Watch that game at Notre Dame. I don't know what Indiana's chances are, but I'm just so happy, so thrilled beyond belief that the Hoosiers are in this thing. And you should be too. That's what I would say. If you don't really have a dog in this fight, get on board. Step on the Indiana bandwagon. I promise you it won't hurt the horse. All right. Now, we're going to play out here with Arson Garden. A song from the 1988 cassette is called Armistice. I'm Jim Lenihan. And on behalf of Patrick Foster, on behalf of Shadow, thank you very much for listening. And we'll talk to you again next week and forever after that.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I win. Google me.